So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Every show up, we do all the research, we bring it to you the way it's meant to be. Nobody else wants to tell you what's really going on, so we do. I tell you, for you guys in the listening queue, as always, we appreciate you. Make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad if you want to be heard on air. For everybody else, the call-in numbers, as always, 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334. And if you want to sign in or just sign in as guests or something, you can also log into the live chat that we run every night as well. I tell you, you know, it's been an interesting few days here in Louisville, Kentucky, and we're going to get to all kinds of issues tonight. You know, one of the biggest issues going on in Louisville started actually late last week into the weekend, concerned now former U of L coach Charlie Strong bolting Louisville for Texas. You know, a lot of people were talking about what a great job this would be for Charlie Strong. You know, of course, there's a lot of people that are disappointed in the fact that he left, et cetera. But we found a nice little story today. Coming out of San Antonio, Red McCombs apparently is one guy who is not pleased at all with Charlie Strong's hire. We'll get to that discussion in just a second. How are you, Mr. Martin?
Oh, doing all right. Just actually, as always, I've got an excuse. I had to go stoke the fire, you know, the wood-burning stove. Got to keep everybody happy.
Oh, I hear you, man. We've always got to keep everybody happy. It's the thing about it. Everybody's happy but us, man, because we get stuck with all the work. But that's okay. That's all right. Sometimes working makes you happy. I'm happy all the time. You know, I wanted to start tonight, as I was mentioning at the top of the show, I want to talk a little bit about this this deal with Texas and Charlie Strong. I tell you, one of the biggest things when you take a job like Texas, or if you take a job in any Division I college for the most part, you have to please the boosters. The boosters are the ones who really make it all happen in college sports. Don't kid yourself thinking that the coaches or the ADs or anybody else do anything without the booster approval. Well, apparently in Texas, Red McCombs, for you guys who don't know who McCombs is, he's the co-founder of Clear Channel Communications, one of our rivals. He's also the former owner of the San Antonio Spurs, the Denver Nuggets, and the Minnesota Vikings. But Red McCombs is probably one of the chief financial boosters to the University of Texas. He's donated more than $100 million to the university over time. And McCombs is pretty upset that Texas hired Charlie Strong as a head coach. He went on record this morning as saying that Charlie Strong would be a good position coach, maybe even a coordinator, but he was extremely upset that athletic director Steve Patterson didn't even bother checking with the boosters before he hired Charlie Strong. Not a good way to start your tenure there, is it?
Well, you know, I can't blame Charlie Strong for that, but leading up to the Texas hire, there were a lot of articles that were out there about how this Texas AD kind of does things different. You know, it puts
right.
a lot of people off. You know, and granted, as we said before, Jurich is the best AD in the United States, and Charlie Strong maybe should have considered that. But, you know, once again, I think Charlie Strong will do well. I mean, I've also read it, but let's face it, when you've got when you put over 100,000 fans in and you have an enormous school like that with lots and lots of boosters, you know, it's just like with us and just like with anything. It's, you give it enough people, somebody's not going to like you. You know, I don't know why this guy doesn't like Charlie Strong. I mean, they got Texas, mighty Texas, got embarrassed in their most recent bowl game. So, you know, it's time to move on. So I don't put a lot in. I mean, guys got a lot of money, but then again, so do a lot of people in Texas. You know,
well, I tell you.
But we've got a massive alumni. I mean, the guy's not happy. I mean, I hope Coach Strong's probably seen, you know, been there, done that before. So hopefully just like, well, I'll just have to shut him up.
We'll find out. I tell you, Mac Brown, the former coach of Texas that just left and made room for Charlie Strong, Mac Brown and Red McCombs were really good friends. You know, and Texas is so dedicated. I mean, here's how important Red McCombs is. You put $100 million to a university. You know, University of Texas named its business school after Red McCombs, and they also placed a statue inside the stadium of Red McCombs. So this isn't your typical run-of-the-mill donor. This is the chief donor, and he's been rewarded handsomely with prominent, you know, displays right there at the university. I'm not sure what this means in the long run, but I found it a very interesting contrast to everything that we've been told over the last couple of days. Was this a good move for Charlie Strong? Sure it was. But, you know, when you don't have the boosters on your side, it's going to create some problems. So I'm really curious to see how Charlie handles that kind of adversity if he has a loss
next year. You know, when you got to look at the whole package, it's a done deal, so we're just speculating now what happens going forward. But, yeah, it's another thing. We talk about Jurich and stuff at U of L, but they've also got some of the better boosters, in my opinion, going. I mean, you've got a guy like John Schnatter who's, you know, doesn't have this McCombs kind of money, I don't think. But, yeah, there's a guy who puts a few million, you know, puts up millions whenever it's asked for, and you never hear about him going around getting his name put up somewhere or trying to influence decision-making. I mean, hell, they didn't listen to him when he wanted to, you know, when he came to the arena. But, I mean, we've got some good boosters who, you know, contribute enough money, and they step back and they don't involve themselves, and they don't offer their opinions, you know, ahead of the first practice like this McComb guy did. They, you know, whatever.
Well, I think it's
everybody, you know what they say about opinions.
Well, sure. You know, I'm interested really, truly in looking at Texas next year now. You know, I never really follow Texas football. I don't really have a reason to. But I will follow them next year. I'm really curious to see what happens if Charlie Strong starts the year and gets a loss or two, what's going to happen to him and how he's going to handle that adversity. Because when you've got your major donor, the one thing Texas will throw Charlie Strong under the bus immediately. If Red McCombs went out public and said, get rid of him now or I pull my support, Charlie Strong would be gone tomorrow no matter what the buyout is to get rid of him. So it's going to be interesting to see next year. In the meantime, on the flip side, here in Louisville, we're still trying to figure out who we're looking at hiring. I've heard everything from Arizona State's coach or from Arizona's coach to Michigan State defensive coach. You know, but the number one name, if you look at any of the media outlets here in Louisville, the Courier-Journal, WLKY, WDRB, all these people have done these polls and listed the top eight people to come to Louisville. And far and away, as we talked about last night, far and away, Bobby Petrino is the number one choice by the people who responded to these polls. And we're not talking about just 100 or 150 people. The Courier-Journal, the last I saw, had over 4,800 people take this poll, and about 50% of them voted for Bobby Petrino, with the rest divided among the rest of the contenders. And basically the same thing at the WDRB poll, which I checked right before we went on air. So, you know, for all these negative comments that we continue seeing, I know on Facebook I put something up on one of my pages, you know, supporting Bobby Petrino, and you're seeing all this negative stuff go out there. You know, Bobby Petrino is a scumbag, this kind of stuff. But, you know, Bobby Petrino never had an NCAA violation. He's never had a program in trouble. You know, for his job perspective, Bobby Petrino has done a hell of a job. Why would people say all these negative things? But when you look at the polling shows that Bobby Petrino far and away is the number one guy that most people want.
Yeah. Well, and you've obviously, you know, you've been seeing, I'm doing a lot of the same stuff you're doing with that, you know, and we both agree. You know, he left for the pros, can't blame him for that, because that was a big money job, didn't work out, and he went, you know, Arkansas and started turning that around. And the man screwed up off the field. Really nothing to do with the program. He had to do with his personal life, and, you know, feel free to make comparisons to Rick Pitino if you want, but you know what? Rick Pitino still coaches a pretty damn good basketball team, and he, you know, he's good for the program. But you know, I think Bobby Petrino has done his penance. You know, this is one of those things. I think it's actually pretty cool. The U of L fans are looking out there saying, okay, you know, everybody makes mistakes. Come on back.
Right.
You know, come on back. We know, and I've had employees that have done that before. You know, they're good employees, and they want to try something else. A couple months later, they come back. You know, I said, you know what? I can't blame you for wanting to try something else. I've told my employees that all the time. They come back, it's like, okay, well, sure, you're welcome back. I've got a business to run. You know what the hell you're doing. I don't have to train you.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing. And what really gets me is, I mean, we're talking about sports. We're not talking about any lifelong thing that's going to affect your daily life or my daily life. We're talking about sports. I mean, let's face facts here. You know, we compare Petrino and the stuff that Petrino went through and all that crap in her personal life. But, you know, there's a guy that comes to mind. I mean, this is a political show, so let's really do this. There's a guy that comes to mind that affects our personal lives, or did for 8 years, that affects our personal lives every single day, that lied about cheating on his wife, and his name was Bill Clinton. And he's a martyr to millions of people across this country, most of which are the same ones who are putting out the negative comments about Bobby Petrino, talking about what a guy Bill Clinton was. I don't get that.
Yeah.
That's hypocrisy.
And I think, you know, and I see people talking about morality and stuff and character. Mm-hmm. You know, a football coach, especially when you think about, you know, there's your really, you know, there's going to be your rich kids that come in from top-notch high school programs and stuff and private schools. Got a lot of tough inner-city kids that have probably colored outside the lines a few times, you know, and probably had a little trouble.
Look at Shane Banana.
Yeah, well, and you know, like the kid that came to us from that, you know, used to play at Auburn or LSU or whatever. Yeah, Auburn, the running back. You know, kids, they're not all angels. And I think to some degree, having a coach who could sit there and look these kids straight in the eye and go, you know what? I'm not just standing here as some guy who never screwed up and never pretty much almost lost everything I had because I behaved, you know. He's like, I did it. I've been there. And so you can look at these kids and say, I got damn lucky. You know, one in a million chance that I'm back here.
Well, I think Petrino is a great testament.
This is a coach that can look at these kids and say, if you get a chance to play football for U of L, you make the most of it, and you don't screw it up. Because he can look them straight in the eye and say, it's a fluke that I'm here. As good as I am, I'd probably be coaching, Canadian Football League or
something. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, so it's like, guys, I think there's some life lessons in there. You can look a lot of these kids in the eye and says, don't screw up.
Well, I think when he tells a kid, and I agree with you, because I think when he tells a kid not to screw up, he can jump on his personal history and show them that there were repercussions for his actions and use that as a building point to actually help these kids that are coming out of these troubled neighborhoods. Look at Shane Bahana, for example. Shane was given every chance in the world, and ultimately Louisville had to kick him off the team. You know, he just got kicked off the team right after the Kentucky game. Imagine that. That was the deal. Nobody could really relate to Shane Bahana. Rick Pitino, you know, could with the Karen Seifert thing, but Pitino doesn't operate that way. You know, this is a situation where I think Bobby Petrino would be a good positive influence on these guys because he is a fractured soul. He is a role model who had to re-earn everything he's gotten if he comes here. And I just think it's a good fit. I really do. But maybe that's
just... Well, not only that, but you were sitting here talking about, a lot of the negatives. And, of course, I've had some fun with that, too. It's the UK fans, in large part, of the local people I know, are the ones that are putting up, the pictures of Petrino and he got beat up. and the funny motorcycle pictures and things like that. They're putting those up. And they some people think that in social media and call-in radio or whatever else, they could sit there and say, let's rag on them. Let's assault their character. Yeah, that will sway Tom Juris. And as I've said before, they're publicly they're trying to make fun of U of L. They're privately they're going, oh crap, not Petrino again.
Well, I tell you, I think it's a big testament to Bobby Petrino as well because the Student Activity Center on the U of L campus, where Tom George's office is at, there's a nice picture somebody posted on Facebook. I can't remember the source. It may have been Terry Miners, but they had a nice picture. Somebody hung a white sign up that said "Bring Back Bobby," displayed prominently over the entrance to the Student Activity Center. That's a pretty powerful message to Petrino about where the students at U of L stand as well. So, I think Petrino's got all the support in the world.
Not only the students, but I think and these things could totally blow up on us. But by the same token, I think Petrino, even if he doesn't get the job, if he does, which we think he will. He's going to have to come here absolutely moved, into forgiveness and the way people wanted him back. He's going to be moved. And, you got to think at some point that if a guy, if you want him back after that, he's got to look at that and think, this is home. This is,
well, I do.
And you would hope he won't move on in the future. You never know. It's a business. But, gosh, I would have to think if I was Petrino and people were saying, oh, Bobby, hands down, we want Bobby back. And I'd have to sit there and say, you mean after all the crap I did, you still want me back? I'm going to do a job for you like you've never seen.
Well, I tell you, Coach Petrino, if you decide, if you can get back to Louisville and Tom Drich agrees to hire you, I will do something I never do. I will actually work for free and write your opening statement to the press when you get here. I will do that because I tell you, it's going to have to be a powerful statement to the people. It's what I do every day for all kinds of people, but I'll do that for free because I think it's important for Petrino to lay out, admit to his sins, ask for forgiveness, and then move the hell on. Get back to football. But I think he can do that. I really do. All right, we're going to take our first break of the night. When we get back, yes, folks, you got it. We're going to shift back into politics, which is why you come to this show. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Ed Sprinkler Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. ErniesPrintShop.com, 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Sprinkler of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change.
Gracious show here on the MVM Radio Network. If you guys that want to call in, don't forget 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For the rest of you guys that are in the listening queue, we appreciate you as always, but don't forget to hit that number one on your dial pad if you want to be heard on air. Couple of quick notes. We mentioned last week, it's interesting though, Wave 3 WFPL both did great stories on this. But the Democrats voted on a 9-7 vote to make Vicki Aubrey Welch the new Democratic caucus chair, replacing David James. David James was basically booted from the caucus chair in last night's election. What makes this important is the Metro Council, because of Democratic control, the Democratic caucus chair will be the one, their second in rank. So Jim King, who was reelected unanimously as council president, you know, for whatever reason, isn't there to take care of business, that a Democratic caucus chair, in this case, Vicki Aubrey Welch, would be the one to step up to the plate. But that should concern everybody. It really should. But the interesting thing was the vote, 9-7. You know, we had talked about the Shanklin 7 forever now. The Shanklin 7 includes all the African American Council members, District 1 through 6, and it also includes Brent Ackerson. There was Shanklin 8 for a while there, but from what I understand, the 8th person decided to jump back into the Jim King camp and get back on board the money wagon. So now we're back down to the Shanklin 7. But this was exactly what happened. The people who voted to keep Barbara Shanklin were the ones who voted for David James. The other 9 Democratic members voted for Vicki Aubrey Welch, and our good friend Dan Johnson made a deal to become the vice caucus chair as long as he voted for Welch, and he followed through. So here you go. The problem, though, and this is the thing that concerns me, since merger took effect in 2003, one of the things that was promised when we went into merger in 2002, especially to the African-American population, one of the things that was promised was that the African-American population would have representatives in leadership. This is the first time since 2003 that there are no black leaders whatsoever in the Metro Council. So now you've got, once again, the whole African-American population, the whole black community is being shunned, and they don't have a leadership position that can represent them fairly. Do you see anything wrong with that?
Well, I see, first off, it's the Democrats that control the council, and they're the ones that called that shot. That's their bed. They get the lie in it. Now, Grant, I think David James is superior to either of the two that got elected. I'll say that right now.
Totally agree.
If I was a Democrat, so I said vote for Vicki Aubrey Welch, I would say no. they said vote for Dan Johnson, said no. Wouldn't even think about it. You know, no, it's not going to happen.
But, well, I got to be honest.
I mean, it happens. I mean, let's face it. Mary Woolridge basically excluded herself when she came out with that comment after the Shanklin vote. Shanklin, please.
Oh,
now,
man,
to some degree, I don't understand why Attica Scott. Now, we don't like her. You know, I tend not to, and I know you do too, tend not to be fans of her politics. But as far as being intelligent, driven, and articulate, yeah, she's pretty good at that. I think she's definitely a higher up, you know, a better pick than Dan Johnson or Vicki Elvey Welch. So I don't know why she wasn't, but her name wasn't put up there either. But like I said, a couple of them sort of took themselves out with the way they behaved, like Shanklin. But yeah, there's some definite ones that should have seen something. I mean, let's face it, Attica Scott she's pretty sharp. And David James, very well respected and very well spoken. So I think both of them should have been given more consideration than the two that got elected.
Well, this was not, and this is the thing I want people to understand. This is the most important part of this whole vote. This had absolutely nothing to do with Vicki Welch getting 9 votes and Dan Johnson getting 9 votes. These votes weren't going for Vicki Welch or Dan Johnson. These votes were going because Jim King said to vote this way. I mean, that's the truth of the matter. So this just shows that Jim King has an iron fist with the council. Those 9 people weren't voting for Vicki Welch. They were voting to support Jim King or else. That's the situation you're in. You know, it is interesting that Jim King was reelected once again for the 4th straight year as the Metro Council president. But I have to say this. Now, that was a unanimous vote as well, with the exception of one person. Barbara Shanklin did not vote on the presidency because of the situation between her and Jim King. She refused to vote on it and abstained from it. The other 25 council members, unanimous choice. Obvious reasons,
sure?
Right?
Yeah. Ed, are you sure her attorney didn't show up and says, leave, don't vote, don't say a word?
I have not heard anything about Aubrey Williams ordering her to leave yet. No, I have not. But, you know, it is interesting, though. But I tell you, as far as the presidency is concerned, you know, a lot of people think that I hate Jim King and all this other stuff. It is far from the truth. I don't hate anybody, but I want to hold people accountable when they're doing public business, because it's our business. But in the case of Jim King as Metro Council president, I honestly think Jim King to date has done a pretty good job as Metro Council president over the last 3 years. The only thing that concerns me going into his 4th year is I think that he's too close to Greg Fisher. Greg Fisher is tainted goods, and if we do things correctly, Greg Fisher should be out before the election even gets here in November. He's in some serious trouble right now, him and Kevin Cosby both. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how the 4th year combines. But Jim King has done a good job as president, but I don't like the fact that we have so many weasels on the council who are going to vote for somebody because Jim King didn't want David James as a Democratic caucus chair because of personal feelings. So that bothers me a great deal. And Vicki Welch even went public in an article with WFPL that came out yesterday, our good friend Philip Bailey over there, even went public saying that the only reason she was running for caucus chair was to aid her reelection efforts next year. It wasn't that she had any plans to help do anything on behalf of the Republican Party. It wasn't that she had any plans to do any, or I'm sorry, the Democratic Party. It wasn't that she had any plans to do anything meaningful for anybody other than aid her reelection campaign next year. That to me is disturbing of somebody who wants leadership.
It's disturbing. It's insulting. It's like, okay, so you want to, you're basically the equivalent of like one of those Russian generals that sits up on the podium with like 185,000 medals on their chest, and you're supposed to respect them because of that. Now what? She's going to go back to her constituents and say, hey, look, a group of my fellow political elite folks voted me to be the leader.
Right.
You know, is it an insult to her voters? It's like, oh, well, she's a Democrat caucus chair. Well, gosh, we should retain her, you know? The roads look so nice in our, you know, never mind the potholes or the broken sidewalks or the crime or anything. She's a caucus chair. Let's vote for her. Like, you know, what an insult to the voters.
Well, it really is. I totally agree with you there. I really do. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this works out over the upcoming year. But there is clearly, the thing that people need to pay attention to right now is that there is clearly a disconnect on the Metro Council, apparently divided along racial lines, and it's going to be interesting on how all this plays out in the coming year. You know, we've got some problems in Louisville that need to work out. I do know that I don't like the fact that I think Jim King is on board the local sales option tax with Greg Fisher. That relationship concerns me a great deal. But I tell you, moving forward, we've got a great story, and I've got to give credit to Jake Payne over Page One Kentucky. We have got a great story coming out of there. Ed Marksberry, who was the first Democrat to sign up to take on incumbent Mitch McConnell in the race, put out a disturbing thing. The Kentucky Democratic Party screwed Marksberry over greatly, to say the least. And Allison Lundigan Grimes.
We've talked about that on this show.
As the first
candidate to announce to run against Mitch,
right.
He was totally and utterly dissed by his party.
There's no doubt about it. And it's interesting because Ed Marksberry has now come clean and told the whole world what we already know goes on, but that he was offered to try to buy him out of running to protect Allison Lundigan Grimes, but then they screwed up and didn't follow through on the deal. So Ed Marksberry went independent, and he's running anyway. I just put a link in the chat room to that story over at Page One. I rarely do that, but you got to give Jake some credit here. It's interesting because Marksberry, I mean, throughout the whole 15-page report that Jake has linked at the end of the story, it's interesting because Marksberry actually admits he was willing to take a buyout. He was willing to be bought off. So he admits he's got culpability here.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't going to profit anything. We'll give him that much, but
right.
Yeah, he was going to cover his losses and in the honorable way, he had a campaign manager who had really busted his ass for him, and he didn't want to leave this individual hanging, you know, for the duration of the election. And that's the amazing thing to me, as we talked off there, he really wasn't asking that much. He wasn't saying, hey, I got you by the short hair, you know, time to pay the piper. It wasn't like that. It was like, you know, I'm out some money. Okay, well, you know, I'm not going to bow out and walk away and just, you know, take those licks and go. Fair enough. And then the honorable thing, he said, I've got a campaign manager who busted my ass, you know. He or she or whatever, they were, you know, unnamed. I don't know their name right now, but they were, you know, he's looking at it saying, look, this person expected employment, and I was going to give them employment up to the election day. Could you find something for them to do in your campaign with all your money?
Right. And you know, that makes it really interesting. And Jerry Lundgren, Alice's dad, you know, we all know he's dirty in politics. I mean, that's my opinion. I'll stick to it. He got his hand in too much crap that don't make sense to me. But, you know, Jerry put somebody up to call him, Marksberry, to offer to buy him out. You know, said that Allison wanted him gone, that you know, this was going to be a problem for her. You know, and Marksberry actually told these guys that he really liked Allison. And basically all he wanted to do was go public as an attorney. You know, she is, and go public and say that the Kentucky Democratic Party, you know, screwed up and ignored her bylaws. Marksberry had asked the party to send something out announcing his candidacy at the very beginning, and the party said they couldn't do that because of their bylaws, that the bylaws didn't allow them to promote candidates in primaries. And yet, when Allison Lundgren Grimes finally made her announcement, they promoted the hell out of it. So they violated their own bylaws, and all he wanted was Allison Lundgren Grimes to admit that they screwed up and that they were wrong, that the party was wrong for that, and, of course, they wouldn't do that because they want the party to support her. So, you know, it's interesting to me because Marksberry, you know, goes public, says that, you know, if they would find a spot on a campaign for his manager, like you pointed out, and pay off his web designer debt, he would walk away. There wouldn't be any problem about that. You know, he was that much in support of the Democratic Party and Allison Lundgren Grimes. He got a call saying that the deal was made, everything was going to be okay, send his campaign manager's resume. Once he got all of that done, Jonathan Hirst apparently came into play here. That didn't work out good. and they basically never followed through. So because they didn't follow through, now Marshberry is going forward telling people about the deal, and you really need to go to Page One Kentucky for this, folks, or check out the link I just put in the chat room.
Yeah.
At the bottom of that story, there's a link there for the entire PDF 15-page statement from Marshberry. And man, I tell you, Ed, this kind of stuff goes on every day, though. I mean, you know, when you're a candidate for office, if they think you're a threat, they're going to try to get you out. You know, and the biggest way that they do that is offer to pay all your expenses and basically break even, so you're not out any money. I mean, that's the truth.
Yeah, it's like it's sort of a no blood, no foul thing. It's like, okay, you had your fun, now we'll cover whatever your costs were, and you get out. And the thing that just amazes me about this situation, and I'm sure you, when you ran, you probably had some people come up and maybe not go that far, but you know, the suggestion is always made to the third place guy or the fourth place guy or the third party candidate type guy. It's always out there, and you know it's always out there because you were third party and so was I. It gets floated around. It's commonplace. It's to be expected. But the thing that just blows me away about this is, you know, we're talking about a Senate campaign in the early offings that, you know, they were talking like $40 million between the two of them, if not higher. You know, this was going to be the most expensive Senate campaign of all time. Gary Lunderman is worth a fortune, multimillionaire, many times over. You know, and we speculated, you and I, what did we come up with? Like, you think on the low side, maybe $30 grand?
Yeah. On the low side,
I'm thinking on the high side, maybe $100 grand. So okay, put it in the middle. So somewhere for about, and you get an employee with that, and you get Ed Marksberry busting his balls for you. You know, so you're picking up at least two people for that much money. And for all the money they've got, we're talking like a $20 million campaign plus Jerry Lundgren. I mean, whatever he spent against Mitch when he ran, like $14 million. If this is not chump change.
It's also important.
But $50,000 is chump change for these people. And the political elite decided they just had to mess over and screw over the little guy rather than
Agreed.
Just keep their word and cut a teeny-weeny percentage of a check to them and say, okay, welcome aboard.
Agreed. And I tell you, it's interesting as well because, you know, Marshberry's name is known throughout this state. He has been actively involved in many campaigns. Marshberry was very instrumental in helping Steve Beshear, the governor, get elected. So, you know, when you put that into play, Marshberry did reach out to Governor Beshear, and Governor Beshear refused to talk to him or return phone calls. You know, so here's a guy who busted his butt, brought all these votes to Beshear, made sure he got elected, has been this staunch, loyal Democrat forever, is involved in so many campaigns. It helps him get elected, and they screwed him over anyway. One person even laughed at him and talked about what a joke his campaign was going to be. You know, that's insider politics. For me personally, when I ran for mayor as an independent in 2006, you know, the biggest thing that I had to worry about, you know, I mean, I got the offers, get the hell out and we'll take care of you kind of deal. You know, they always say they owe you something, so get in line with 1,000 other people, right? You know, but you know, that's the favors that they promised. But what was interesting for me was the people they had following me. I mean, Jerry Abramson sent his deputy mayor, Will Summers, a fourth son, out to follow me around everywhere I went. And we got into a confrontation one night, and that stopped immediately after I finally confronted him because he didn't like what I had to tell him about Jerry. And the next day when he went to dinner with Jerry, he found out pretty quick that he needed to get the hell out of my way. But it was pretty interesting, but that's the way they play. It's hardball politics, but when you take a guy like Marshberry, and we're going to contact him, reach out to him, folks. I'm sure we can get him on the show to talk about this, but we're going to reach out to Marshberry and try to get him on the show, because I want you guys to hear it in his own words. I mean, this is a guy who is loyal, or has been to this point, and they screwed up so bad, they just made him a contender, because even mainstream media would not give Marshberry the time of day before Allison Lundgren Grimes even thought about getting into the race. He was already an announced candidate, the only Democrat, and mainstream media ignored him because the party said no. It all comes down to money. So it's going to be interesting to see how this develops going forward, but now Marshberry is in the race. He's in the race as an independent, which means he's in the race since all the way through November. If Allison Lundgren Grimes wasn't worried before, they screwed this guy over. She better be worried now because Marksberry is going to get some votes. Will he win? No, I don't think he will. But if he's going to get votes, he's going to get them from the Democratic Party, not Mitch McConnell. So that's going to be interesting to watch going forward, or Matt Bevin, I should say, because Mitch McConnell does have an opponent in his own primary. So that's going to be interesting going forward. You know, we've got some other problems kicking off already. You know, the 2014 General Assembly is kicked into gear. You know, everybody's talking about maybe we get a bipartisan deal for a change, but apparently that's not going to happen. And I tell you why. You can thank David Adams. Yes, I said it. David Adams, who has been out there on a one-man mission because Steve Beshear started Kentucky Next, the Kentucky Obamacare exchange, the state exchange program for Obamacare. He's been out there challenging the legality of this. And even Republican Senate leader has decided to say no. Bob Stivers has said he's going to make it their priority to challenge Governor Steve Beshear's regulatory powers in the wake of his efforts to implement Obamacare. So for everybody out there who thinks that David Adams was wrong or wasn't doing anything, that's a huge admission to what David Adams has been doing for the last several months, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, all along, I know, we all know David is vehemently opposed to Obamacare, but in this case, he's maintained his focus pretty well that it's more a matter of state constitutionality, and that certain ways you've got to do stuff. And you know, granted, if you're going to pass it, if you're going to put something like this in, it has to go through the legislative process. It's not ruled by you know, edict of the governor. And David's been fighting that all along. Now, I do think it's a shame, you know, because everybody's known since Obamacare passed and since Beshear, you know, pretty much let it be known, he was going this direction. He did not oppose it. He never did. And he was itching to get into it. I'm wondering, the only question that comes up with me is what took the Republicans so long? I mean, granted, what took the Democrats so long? What took the legislature so long? And David Adams has got to go in there and fight this fight all by himself, and he may very well win this fight, at which point, you know, thanks, no thanks. We empowered the Constitution of the state of Kentucky, and we don't need the damn legislature vote. Still got the Constitution. We just need to declare it relevant. So I'm sitting back wondering why one guy who's often maligned by both parties, mind you, or at least both party elites, and now they're stepping up and essentially doing what he's done. And I just look at things like that and say, really? Just now got around to that?
Well, that's the way it is. David, you know, that's
like,
the thing
hell,
about
it. Why don't you just wait for the state Supreme Court to rule on it or something? You know, you won't even have to waste your time now. Let him just fix it all for you while you're at it.
Well, I think that sends a powerful message, though, to everybody, because, you know, we often say that, you know, you hear all the gloom and doomers say that one man can't make a difference. Well, in this case, we just proved that to be a lie, because David Adams is one man, and he has made a difference because he's forced the legislature to deal with this situation. And, you know, Senate Leader Bob Stivers also went on to say that part of their priorities, now, of course, we know the Democratic priorities, they've already said, the leader of the state house have already said that their priority was going to be to increase the minimum wage, which is the stupidest thing in the world for job creation, but that's another story. But Bob Stivers also...
I understand the social aspect of it. I do, and I'm empathetic. You know, as somebody who doesn't pay minimum wage, except to my own children when they work for me.
Right.
I don't pay minimum wage, and I can see where it's you know, it can be difficult. And I understand the you know, the old Winston Churchill, if a young man does not a liberal, he doesn't have a heart, but if an old man doesn't, not a conservative, he doesn't have a brain. I get that. I get the empathy part, but like we said last night, when you're surrounded by right-to-work states, and in many cases they're taking jobs from you. You know, we see it happening right across the river sometimes. Just not a real good move right now. Not especially, you know, not when your workforce is undereducated, your state is overrun by prescription drugs, and now you're going to say, okay, well, if you want to hire one of us, it's going to cost you considerably more than it is in a neighboring state. And if there's a union job, you know, neighboring states can be a little more competitive there too. So yeah, let's just go on and really screw the pooch on that one.
Oh, I hear you. And some of the other priorities that Stiver says the Senate is going to be doing, they're going to establish a limit on state debt of 6% of general fund revenues. I think we finally reached that point where we have to establish that limit. And then, of course, he's also going to focus on eliminating what they call the supersizing of the legislative pensions when a legislator takes a job in the executive or judicial branches. Essentially, you know, they're going to try to control these runaway pension costs because these legislators will take on these different jobs with a higher pay for a couple of years just to pad their pensions, sort of like a Julie Denton trying to come back and run. And I know you still haven't made a decision on that. I'm not going there. I know you haven't made a decision on that. So
you went there, not me. We'll just be. Okay.
I understand. That's why I pointed out. I'm not going to put you on the spot. But you know, that's one thing Julie Denton is doing as well. So, you know, this is something that needs to be done. So I like the Senate priorities of this particular biennial, and we'll see what happens. I mean, we really will. I tell you, we've got some other interesting stories going on. I'm going to get to the president in just a second if we have time. Very interesting story coming out of California. Venture capitalist Tim Draper, and this is in the Washington Times, folks, so this is, you know, it's a pretty credible source. But venture capitalist Tim Draper in Silicon Valley has filed paperwork to have something added to the November ballot in California that would divide California into six different states. He says that the California is presently as it is right now, is too big and bloated. He believes that six Californias is an opportunity to get a fresh start, to build new platforms for growth and prosperity. What do you think about that? I actually find that intriguing.
Well, I would think it would to be extremely difficult, you know, on so many levels, but in theory, you know, you can see it because there are very, very distinct areas in California. You know, the Modesto area is, you know, you got your Southern California, you're way down south. You've got some very urban, and you have some very rural areas. Then you have a very up around Sacramento, you have a very conservative area up there. You know, it is a long state with huge swing, you know, huge swings in the demographics, in the income, in the base of the economy. So, based on size and makeup, I guess there's some logic to it, but I don't see how it could be done. I mean, it sounds interesting, but I don't see how. I could see more where it might be able to be divided into larger counties or some sort of trust or something. Yeah, I don't know. It's just busting it into states and having, you know, moving on up to 53 states. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing for me.
That happen.
Well, here's the thing for me, because I tell you, it's really intriguing because California, as we know, is so riddled with debt, they'll never see sunshine. And most of that debt is really triggered into one or two different areas of California, if you get into L.A. and Hollywood, things like that. So, you know, the thought of branching out into six different areas and making each area its own state so they're responsible for their own being, I find very intriguing, and I tell you why. Because California ranks first in population. They've got 38 million people. When you get into land mass and things like that, they're third behind Alaska and Texas. So, you know, when you get into the whole argument about being governable or ungovernable, I mean, there are some seats in California that one representative represents more people than the whole state of South Dakota. You know, if you look at the state Senate districts in California, according to Jack Pitney, he's a political scientist at Claremont, if you look at that, I mean, he says any one of those state Senate districts has more people than the entire population of South Dakota. So when you get into that dynamic, Ed, how much representation do you really have? How effective is your representation? I kind of like the idea of going down that road. It'd be interesting to see if it happens. But, you know, but Draper goes on talking about how California at one time was a national leader in education, and they were. They were. But now they've become untenable and ungovernable. And, of course, he goes better than I would. He gets a lot of credit here I wouldn't give. But he says there's been many good people governing California for many years, and they work very hard, but the results are horrendous. We're the state that charges the most for the worst services. We're simply too big and bloated. It isn't the fault of anyone. It just happened. So the status quo is not going to work for us. If nothing else, this brings to the table the problem with the relationship between those being governed and the ones doing the governing, does it not?
Yeah. And like I say, I don't know if like I say, breaking it into other states is the right way to do it. I think you can almost do like maybe they can break it into state into regions that have a certain amount of autonomy. It's sort of like the 10th Amendment. And these maybe like super counties or something operate within their own tax jurisdiction, and they operate like a state rather than actually do it. I mean, that would be, I'm just saying, adding states, I don't know. But in this modern era, yeah, there's, you know, you could have, you could break it into regions. It's a big, long state. You have Northern California, you know, Middle California, you know, Baja California, whatever, and you know, Southern California. The state could easily be separate. I would say more so it'd be broken into just like management districts or something like that. But they would be huge management districts. They only govern themselves. Sort of like I say, like you have a state government, but state government, just like in Kentucky, but you know, over you got the counties, so the state, you know, you can duke it out. The counties can duke it out with the state if they want in some cases. And I think having regions with a measure of autonomy would work because there is such diversity.
Yeah, I mean, I could agree, but I think it's going to be really interesting to see if they get it on the ballot. We'll worry about the vote later, but if it makes it to the ballot, it's going to take 1 million signatures to get it on the ballot, and Draper apparently is financing the load to try to get those million signatures. So I'm curious to see going forward if he gets the million signatures. If he does, it's going to be very interesting to see what's going on in California in November. Moving forward, I want to get into this story for the next few minutes before we get out of here because there's a lot of hypocrisies here. And then I want to get into some other things with it. But in a weekly address that President Obama does every week, he did it this past Saturday, he actually slammed Republicans for going home for the holidays while letting unemployment insurance benefits expire. Now, the thing that makes this so laughable is he did this from Hawaii, where he was on a two-week holiday in Hawaii. He's criticizing Republicans for going home for the holidays, but he was okay for him to take his family to Hawaii at our expense, $4 million expense at that, for the same holidays. So he goes to make the statement that just a few days after Christmas, more than 1 million of our fellow Americans lost a vital economic lifeline, the temporary insurance that helps folks make ends meet, which we call unemployment. And he blamed the Republicans for going home and not extending unemployment. isn't that hypocritical? How do you think about it?
I'm not sure it's hypocritical. I think it's amateur hours because I think, granted, if you're going to make a statement like that, make it from Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You get Hawaii soon enough. You know, don't make it while you're in Hawaii. Think about context for a little bit. You know, linger behind a little bit, you know. Go out and the snowstorm's coming in, get the photo image, you know, be cold and say, I can't, you know, I understand they went home, but gosh, you know, unemployment right. benefits are going to run out. And then once you get some good play on it, get on Air Force One and go to Hawaii.
You know, and that's it, but this is the audacity of Obama. I mean, he doesn't see anything wrong with him benefiting from it. I mean, this is a $4 million vacation. And on top of that, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney yesterday, you know, when asked about the family's trip to Hawaii, you know, told us that it was roughly $4 million. This 17-day vacation for the president last year was $4 million, and it's going to top that this year. And what's really interesting here is Barack Obama, they were bragging about how, you know, Michelle was going to stay an extra week in Hawaii at Oprah Winfrey's estate on Maui, you know, as a birthday gift from President Obama. Well, I don't know about you, but when I get my wife a birthday gift, I pay for it myself. This birthday gift wasn't from the president. This birthday gift was given to his wife from we, the taxpayers. We're going to pay $100,000 for Michelle Obama to stay an extra week in Hawaii as a birthday present without, you know, without anybody saying okay. You know, it doesn't seem like a lot of money. When you're sitting here talking about a national debt that's over $17 trillion, you know, Obama has increased it by $7 trillion in the 7 years he's been there, and he's taking $4 million vacations and then ripping Republicans for not being in office during the holidays when they can be home with their families like everybody else. That just, to me, is about as hypocritical as it gets. It really is. A couple other things I got to point out here, Ed, real quick. And I may continue this conversation tomorrow night with Dale, but I want to get your opinion on this. We now have word, and this is going to be funny too, there's a federal agency running low on funds because of Obamacare. You want to know who that is?
Sure.
The IRS. The IRS went public and said that they can't afford to implement Obamacare without sacrificing their other priorities. They said they're going to need to spend money on Obamacare implementation at the expense of other agency programs because of budget constraints. That's according to John Koskinen, who was the new IRS commissioner, who was sworn in on December 23rd. He didn't tell anybody what the programs that were going to suffer were going to be. But isn't that interesting? We were told the IRS was going to do all of this. They were funded for all of this. But they're not funded for this. So what does this mean? This means we're going to have to go borrow more money and hire more people and put more money into the IRS. I mean, this is just another example of the BS, lies and manipulation to get Obamacare into existence, is it not?
Yeah. Well, it was going to save money. They were going to hire all the agents for enforcement. And then, of course, I think, it always makes you wonder, they're going to hire all these agents for enforcement. Are they going to make it pay? You know, they're going to be instruments or hammers out there collecting.
Right.
How do they make it pay and not go into the red? But now I really didn't know where you're going with the article. But I look back and think, well, with the Obamacare extension and all those IRS people who were hired to do it, and the fact is now that, you know, well, it's not mandatory, and they keep pushing the deadlines back. But no, these people got to be sitting around thinking, okay, so when do we go?
Well, that's it. That's exactly it. So it's just really interesting to me that we've got all these problems. Now, we know the IRS, you know, with all the problems they've had, the scandals involving Tea Party organizations and everything else, who knows? Maybe they're going to target the Tea Party and try to get them to fund them. I ain't got a clue, but I do know this. We're out of time, my friend. Final thoughts.
Yeah, final thoughts. Yeah, I think the Allison Lindgren Grimes, Ed Marchbury thing, like I said, we've offered Ed to come on, and hopefully he'll take us up on that. Ed would say, we don't necessarily agree. He's another bash of liberal, but, you know, you got to salute him for that, and you definitely got to salute him and respect him for the fact that, you know, being a huge underdog he is, he's taken the tack that he, you know, he's not backing down. On the flip side of that coin, you know, sometimes we like Mitch, sometimes we don't. But I just have to flat out say, as far as Allison Lundgren Grimes and her campaign goes, it is amateur hour. It's amateur hour at its worst. Whether you love Mitch or hate Mitch, you can't honestly tell me at some point if you want, you know, the Howdy Doody gang representing Kentucky in Washington, D.C. I mean, this is amateur hour.
Well, it's a typical Democratic machine here in Kentucky, and that's why we usually typically, in our state elections for federal representation, typically we would rather have Republicans in the national scene. You know, even though we have Democratic majority in the state House, you know, we do keep conservatives in the state Senate and on a national scene. And this is exactly why, because we don't need amateurs at a national level. I tell you, it's very disturbing. Props to Jake Payne over at Page One for getting that story out. You know, in the meantime, folks, we have a lot of serious problems in America. But the biggest problem we have in America is a lack of involvement by you, the people. All of us have to be involved. I mean, it's very disturbing when we're looking at some of the idiocy that's coming out of this White House, that's coming out of these campaigns. The Allison Lindgren Grimes, Ed Marchbury is a great example of what's wrong with campaigns today. You know, why do we accept that? Why do we accept that? I don't have that answer, but hopefully one of you do. In the meantime, tomorrow night we'll be here at 7 o'clock with Dale the Truth. He should be here at 7 with us because of last week. Obviously, he didn't get on air because of weather. Hopefully that's been fixed. And we'll get into a few more things, probably some more unemployment talk tomorrow night as well, because there's some interesting things going on about how much waste there is and unemployment. And we'll talk about that tomorrow night with Dale. In the meantime, Mr. Martin, have a great week. Thank you, sir. And we will see the rest of you guys tomorrow night at 7 right here on the MVM Radio Network. Take care. Have a great night.
All right.